This is part two of a three-part podcast.
Rumford Fireplace. We've got a Rumford Fireplace in the yard out by the Big Berms. And so Justin built that. Of course, we've got lots and lots of rocks. So he's separate. And then he enjoys playing with Cobb. So he used Cobb between the rocks. And so it's a Cobb and Rock Rumford Fireplace. I've heard that the curve isn't quite right. And that when you sit around to get warm, that you don't get warm and that too much heat goes up. So when Ernie and Erica get here, I'm sure that they'll help us to understand why. And after he built it, I pointed out that Cobb's not exactly waterproof. So while it does do great with the fire, when it gets rained on, it will disintegrate. And so he is prepared for the weeping that is to come. And in the meantime, we're going to move more rocks in that area, and it'll get rebuilt as a dry stack kind of thing at a later date.
Yeah, there's still a couple piles of rocks that had accumulated from building the berms and the hoogles around the house. A bunch of the extra rock had been thrown there. So there's plenty of rock to play with, either dry stack or whatever. He also, I don't know if this is later on your list, but Justin also built a big outdoor table and a set of four benches to go with it. And so when they had their fire outdoors the other night, they brought up some of the benches he made to sit around the fire. So
nice benches, nice table. Yeah. And Sam built a nice bench out of roundwood material.
That's right.
And the leftover materials from the sawmill. Because when you cut a log, it leaves like this little crescent sliver at the bottom, and which is just gets cast aside. But he made a really nice bench out of that.
Yeah, the round wood legs come up, you know, to where you can see a mortise and tenon, right? Mm-hmm. And you can see the little what is it, like a
wedge.
Shim?
He put a wedge in there.
Yeah, and so you've got these circles with the wedge you can see in the very top of the bench. And it actually looks really cool. It looks like inlaid wood, you know, so it looks awesome. Yeah.
So, and I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what new picnic tables and the like are going to come out of Justin. I think this was his version one. And it looks, it's very large, very sturdy, very nice. And I'm looking forward to, anyway, I'm looking forward to it, trying a few meals on it. It looks really great. And at the same time, you know, what will be next? Because we could sure use lots of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next thing on the list is that we've got two more projects. Now, when it comes to Wafati 0.7 and Wafati 0.8, then for both of them, there were things done with them where I shouted against it. I tried to, you know, say, no, that's not the way it's done. No. And then on Wafati 0.8, I, was up there like, okay, it's about time to go into this phase. Please make sure that what you do is, and, they're like, okay. And then they didn't. The other thing is that the amount of time it has taken to build. Now Wafati 0.8 is an 800 square foot structure, mm-hmm. and Wafati 0.7 is a 400 square foot structure, mm-hmm. and it's like they both took a certain amount of time, a fair amount of time from people with. So on Wafati 0.8, Tim ran point, Emily and Tony ran the workshop, and Emily and Tony had done a lot of work on 0.7.
Yes.
And then a couple of people that came had skills in construction. And so, but still, you know, it's a workshop. So 4 weeks, and it was close to being done. And, after the 4 week workshop. And so we're getting, you know, the dump truck and the excavator up there this upcoming week. And we should be able to get them both buried.
Right, because 0.7 was never fully buried last fall because the ground froze, and that's been, there were questions out on the forums about that. Oh, so how'd the first winter go in the Wolf Eye? Well, it wasn't.
Doesn't count.
Real test, because the earthen birming wasn't in place.
Yeah, Tim's family did live up there, but it was kind of like living in a log cabin.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we weren't getting the benefits of the berms.
Right.
The excavator and the dump truck should be going up. We'll get them both buried. The key is that I'm pretty frustrated that I kind of felt like they should be able to be built very, very fast and much cheaper than they were built. And Wolfadi 0.4, a 400 square foot structure.
0.7, you mean?
Oh,
the
yeah.
The first one is
0.7. Wolfadi 0.7 is a 400 square foot structure, and it had about $1,200 just in screws to hold it on. And it may have been more like $1,500 worth of materials.
Yeah.
I think that Wolfadi 0.8 probably had something closer to, and it's double the size, but it probably had about $600 to $800 worth of materials. And I'm kind of, you know, liking the idea of, you know, can we build a Wolfadi where the cost of materials is well under $200? And so we're talking about building a 10 by 10 Wolfadi after the upcoming Innovators event. By the way, the Rocket Mass Heater Workshop sold out. It's all sold out. Yeah. The Innovators Workshop, we have one ticket left, but I kind of figure who would want to go to the Innovators event and not go to the Rocket Mass Heater Workshop?
That's what I'm thinking. I think that last spot hasn't been filled because of that. Yeah.
So I think we should just let it go. Mm-hmm. Maybe if we come up with something, we'll announce it on the Dailyish email. If people are interested in that, get signed up for the Dailyish email. But there's talk of building a 10 by 10 Wolfadi, and Sam has put together the plans for it. We've got a spot, a general area picked out next to the Lemon Tree site. But we need to get up there with the excavator and open up the spot and dig it out. And I'm hoping it's something that we can build in less than a weekend, you know, so less than 2 days. And
right, not including log prep. If the logs are all there and ready, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in fact, this design is something where I want something, because we've got two different projects. There's the 10 by 10 Wolfadi, and then there's the thing we're calling the berm shed. So we need another berm down by the auditorium, but we also need parking for the electric vehicles. And parking for the electric tractor, and parking and place to store lumber, place to store firewood, and so it's like what we need are sheds. But I kind of feel like, you know, the berm shed would not be a Wolfadi design; it would be closer to an Ayler design. But I kind of feel like we've got so much pole wood. And it's kind of like it can be a fire hazard if you don't do something with it. It grows. I mean, we've got some serious jungle here. Mm-hmm. Coniferous jungle, but jungle.
Yeah.
And so we got to thin that stuff out. And I'm kind of thinking like when they built the walls of 0.7 and 0.8, the wall material, they used like 12-inch stuff, 8 to 12-inch. And it's like, that is some serious wood, and it's so heavy. And you can't just pick that up and put it in place.
Right.
And then on top of that, the way that they go about attaching it is a hell of a lot of work. And so, and it's just slow. It's time consuming. And then they peeled it all, which is an enormous amount of work. And so on these two projects, I want the pole wood that's going to make up the sides to be like 2 to 4 inches, maybe 5 inches max. So smaller diameter stuff. And then we'll have more posts along the edges so that it doesn't bow in with the weight of the soil.
Yeah.
And I've got a variety of designs. I'm going to try and take pictures and stuff like that. But I'm hoping that the 10 by 10 Wolfadi is something that can be built in a weekend. And and it'll be under $100 in materials to build just the general shell. Although, you know, there might be additional expenses in like the hardware for a door and the hardware for, you know, windows and things.
Well, and it just works out perfectly to do those where you want a berm anyway. You want to be hiding our shop activities from the road because we're right on the road here at base camp. It's a little local road, but still, you know, there's neighbors that drive by and a lot of times they slow down to look at what equipment's moving or doing things. They slow down or even stop and go, what are they doing up there? And if these
during the pig slaughtering workshop,
the game warden asked, what
stop
is that
right on the road,
what is that?
Yeah
and so having you know, stacking functions. It's a berm and it's a shed on the inside side. And it's amazing to me how much storage we need. We're so behind on storage already. We've got, like you said, the four electric vehicles, the electric tractor. You know, those could fill up the shop, just those. And then there's no room to have movie night in the shop, or there's no room for Tim to have a welding project, or there's no room to do other things. So when we are feeding 15 people a day, we are using the garage here, you know, the garage, not the shop / auditorium, but we're using the garage as a dining hall. Because we can't fit 15 people in our kitchen. We kind of max out at about 13. Yeah. We can sort of do it, but you're still sniffing everybody's armpits as they try and get food, you know? And
way to sell it, Jocelyn.
I know. Yeah. But so we've been using our garage here as a dining hall. And just to do that, we have to move one of the electric vehicles out, and we need to start... It's been firewood storage because we have no other firewood storage. And now we're moving boneyard stuff out of the parking lot. So we'll have more room for parking for our September Rocket Mass heater events. I mean, it's phenomenal. You know, you start amassing all the materials for the Rocket Mass heaters. You amass firewood, you amass lumber, you amass, you know, stuff.
Which is why
I think the projects.
In 2016... Then we need to do our next workshop, but it's on the laboratory.
Mm.
And for 2015, I think the thing to do is rather than having workshops here, because I think that the auditorium is fine for feeding people. It's great for having a place to feed people. We have plenty of tables and, you know, we're all set up to handle, you know, 50, 60 people. And we only did the garage, which I think we shouldn't do that again.
Hmm.
We only did it because we had not enough people to fit into the house, but enough people where it's like, do we really want to take up space in the auditorium and walk the food all the way down there?
Well, and the auditorium was busy with welding projects too, so
not during the time that we used it.
Oh, okay.
The auditorium was empty and idle.
Ah.
The only reason we didn't do it in the auditorium was that people were saying, if we have this few people, can we do it here in the garage instead of taking the food all the way down to the auditorium?
Yeah.
So I think that the garage needs to go back to being, you know, the kind of storage space that it's supposed to be.
Sure.
And that we use the auditorium for workshops. So setting that aside, I'm trying to talk about the 10x10 Wafati. I think I think this year, after the Innovators event, let's see if we can get a 10x10 Wafati built. And then also, let's work on this berm shed thing. And I kind of feel like, and the berm shed thing is 1,000 square feet. And I'm kind of thinking like, I hope that it will go up really fast, super, super fast. Because it took a lot of people 4 weeks to get the Wafati 0.8 put together.
Well, part of wasn't almost the last week or a week or more doing interior walls. So there was no.
Well, there was some time spent on a style of interior wall that I still don't understand why that was that way, but I don't think it was an entire week.
Okay. Yeah. It just seemed like a lot of time went to that.
I think that, you know, there are decisions that were made last year, and I kind of feel like the person who does the work gets to make a lot of the decisions. Mm-hmm. And in both of those projects, mm-hmm. I provided guidance and I checked in and I've, you know, provided a lot of materials and I did that kind of thing. But really, I was tied up in the office trying to, like, you know, same thing as always, pay for everything.
Feed people. Yeah.
Yeah. And
keep people fed.
And
yeah.
So it's like, so then it's like, I, but in both cases, I was very emphatic, like, no, you can't do that. That's a violation of what we're trying to accomplish here. And they're like, yeah, okay, I get it. And then I'd come back to find out that they did it exactly the way I said not to do it. In fact, my brother was so rude as to say something like, if you don't like it, we'll lock the door. And I'm like, oh, seriously? Is that the way you're going to? So these structures are going to be done my way. And they're going to have the things in it that I need to have done in order to be able to be what I feel is appropriate. And the other thing is so much time is going into these structures. And it's like, that in itself is not what the whole idea is that you can build something really fast in a tiny fraction of the time that it takes to build a conventional home. And then there's the benefits of the not having to heat it, which we need to just test.
Right.
So, anyway, so both the berm and the 10x10 Wafadi are going to be things that I'm going to put a lot of emphasis on. They're built very fast, and they're going to be built very, very cheap.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that we succeed in this, but, you know, we'll see. All right. Next item on the list, art and aesthetics. I think that I've been sucking in this space.
Oh, well, I thought you would want to finish talking about Wolfati stuff since we were on Wolfati's and talk. You had another item here about Wolfati 0.8 because we were just talking about 0.8.
All right, Jocelyn, we'll do it your way. I mean, that's not the order of the list, but you were right that is indeed tied to Wolfati 0.8. So during the workshop, we had, I think it's like 11 people working on it. Was that right?
It was up and down. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so one of the people was Burra's boy.
Mm-hmm.
And so
Alan.
Yeah, Alan. 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 Alan.
If you did that once, you did that 20 times to the
Alan.
Poor guy.
Yeah. And he rolls his eyes and says, do we have to really do this again? Right. Alan.
Right.
Alan.
Right.
So,
and you kept calling him English, though he's Welsh and from Portugal.
Right. But
that British accent,
makes
you think English, but it's Welsh.
Yeah,
Welsh.
I could just say European, and then we cover it. But yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so Burra's boy was here, and so Burra is, of course, the manager of the forums out at Permies, and. And so she sent Alan out here to chip in. And I don't know, Alan's talking about coming back.
Next year.
So we weren't, you know, it wasn't all suffering.
No. And he, you know, he worked with a pickaxe out on the back hill trails here at base camp until he had blisters. And he, you know, and it was blistering heat to work on the Wafadi, though I guess it's not as hot here as in Portugal, but at times. So, he worked really hard, and Burra said he wants to get a job back home to save up money to pay for his way to come out here again.
So he'll be out here next year.
Yeah,
so
that's awesome.
We got pictures of all the people that helped build Wafadi 0.8, and it was a good crew. We had
some people might have left before that picture was taken because there were some people that were just here for 2 weeks, or a person that was here a week, and
that's,
you know, so we had some ins and outs like that. So there may be a couple people not in that group shot at the end.
Good point. So the group shot at the end was just the last day of the workshop, and so it's the people that were there the last day. But there were a lot of people that were there for the entire 4 weeks.
Yeah.
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 So from putting in the first posts all the way through, they didn't bury it, but they got a lot of the dirt placed on the walls.
And around the outside of the walls. Yeah.
Right, right. So art and aesthetics.
Okay, we can talk about that now.
So I'm not really sure what exactly art and aesthetics is going to mean. And I think that you can't really define it. It's going to be dependent upon the artisan. But so much stuff we've been focusing on is just so strictly practical.
Well, and that's one area where I would love to do more, though I'm not a designer or a decorator by any means. And yet, you know, the house has been plain. Our office is still largely unfinished and messy. There's a bunch of things here, you know, let alone outside, you know, getting more growies going. And even, like I mentioned earlier, just some of the swales that have been dug to manage the water coming out of the hydrants and out of the showers and things like that. I mean, that's improved the aesthetics a lot to me. Plus, this summer has had a lot more rain than last summer. So when I moved here in June, it was already brown, 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 pretty brown and dry here.
Well,
a year ago,
at base camp.
At base camp. Well, yeah.
The laboratory stays pretty green all
year.
Yeah.
But this year, so Tim and Christy ran bulls through the property here last summer and fall. And there was more rain this summer than there was last summer. And just all of Montana has stayed greener in my perception this summer than it did last summer. And especially base camp has been just lusher and greener looking. So, you know, we have a lot of peeing outdoors going on. We had the bulls. We've done sheep composting places when we weren't giving things to the pigs. And I know that's later on the list. But just those little things have made some improvements. But I still feel, man, there's a lot we could do in terms of gardening, to make things look prettier around here. A lot more we could do with wall treatments and just different things to make it look better around here. So we're focusing more on that, and that's something Rebecca and Bella really like to do. So they're doing some signs for us and want to do some art different places for us.
I kind of feel like, you know, granted, the office in here is very rough looking. I mean, we don't even have a ceiling.
Right. A mouse fell out of there and hit your back.
Yeah.
Fell out from between the insulation and hit your back while you were working at your desk.
That was a weird day.
Was that in a podcast?
I don't know. I don't know. Now we have to look up to make sure there's not a mouse squirming right now about to land on me. So yes, the office is, but I kind of feel like, you know, we've got higher priorities than, we've got to keep the sawmill running to come up with the material to put a ceiling in here, and that'll come maybe it'll be a nice project for this winter. I'm kind of thinking more like, the aesthetics outdoors, and it's kind of like so lots of, you know, you start with lots of berms and hugelkultur beds and growies and life and beauty, and then, you know, maybe bring in some animals, but even more than that, you know, how do you bring in art and that kind of thing? And one of the things we've been doing is, and this is something which I think really helps, because you start, I mean, here at base camp, as you move up towards the volcano, there's different terraces.
Does everyone know the little 500-foot mountain here at base camp is the hollowed-out volcano with submarine access?
With good submarine access.
Apologies. Okay.
I mean, how can you do world domination without a hollowed-out volcano and good submarine access?
Right. Yeah, so yeah. That is the name of the little 500-foot mountain here.
Is it 500 feet? Is that what it is?
You told me it was 500 feet up there.
It looks about 500 feet. I thought maybe you found something official or, you know, major.
I looked
somehow
at the, what do you call the maps that show the elevation? So I looked at an elevation that looked about 500 feet.
Yeah, it's up there. It's big. It's pretty big. And so, but as you're going up there, there's like these terraces, because the rock around here, basalt, is kind of a layered basalt. And so it's like as a layer is stripped off, it makes a big plateau flat space. And so then, you know, you'll, I don't know, there's like probably 8 different terraces.
Yeah, there's a kind of a switchback road that goes up along those terraces to get up there.
And so, but when we try to talk about a particular spot, we kind of struggle. And we've been talking about, you know, that trail, that road, that over there, you know what I'm talking about? And no, I'm still lost. Which one? Is it the one over? And so what we've started to do is to come up with names for things and name these different items. And I think that that's been helping with the aesthetics. Plus, once you've got some names for things, then that gives people ideas for art they want. Have you seen the sign?
No, that, I haven't seen it yet.
So Bella's made a sign for the submarine access road.
So last fall, when Armin and Lori were here, Lori used scrap wood from the sawmill to make signs just with a Sharpie for the Love Shack and the Shower Shack and the Shit Shack. So she made those just with a Sharpie. But what Bella has is a burning tool, and it uses a magnifying glass with the sun. So it's a completely, no electricity needed burning tool. I was thinking those kind that you would plug in that were a burning tool, but no, it's a magnifying glass, uses the sun. And so she went over those signs that just had Sharpie, because the Sharpie will eventually fade, and she burned the letters of those, and then has been making more signs with that, which what a cool little tool and technology to do art with.
It is cool.
Yeah.
So we're getting those signs. The picnic tables, the benches are held.
And I should say Rebecca is doing the art and then Bella burns it. So
okay.
They both kind of feel like Rebecca does the better drawing and Bella does the better burning. So
they're a team.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of ideas about how to improve certain things. And a lot of it comes down to like, okay, what can we grow here to make it amazing? And there is a space that's between the office and the double wide. And because part of me kind of feels like you're talking about how do we improve the aesthetic of a double wide, and it's kind of like, oh, right. Just kind of feel like it's just a double wide. Yeah. And then the office is a garage that's been converted, and it's just T111 siding. It's like, I've got some ideas about how to improve the aesthetic about that. So some people might accidentally think it's a log structure, but that's another story for another day.
Yeah. Well, and I just thought I would get to more puttering around getting growies going around the house a little bit better. But, my broken arm in January set me back with that. And I just have been spending way too much time at the computer myself. Yeah. So I had really thought, I'd putter here and there. I do have some containers with kitchen herbs growing out of them, and that helps some. But it's not quite enough.
We need real soil and get our polycultures going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've been working on that, so.
Did you see that we got 2 toilet tanks to go into the pooper?
Yes.
And so the 2 toilet tanks go behind the toilet seats. There's room for these toilet tanks to go back there. And they don't do, we're just going to fill them with dirt and plant flowers in them.
Yeah, just for the comedy of having toilet tanks behind the pooper. And Rick found the most amazing colored porcelain. Isn't one of them pink and one of them blue or green
yellow,
or something? Yellow.
Like one's yellow and one's pink.
That's like that old school porcelain. You don't find colors like that anymore. It's they're hilarious.
I think that they were so cheap because they were these nutty colors.
Yeah.
So the boneyard is helping us to get stuff moved out of the parking lot and into the boneyard. So that way that it's like, take all your ugly materials and put them somewhere.
Yeah. Well, and that was something else that was just created with a bunch of the earthworks that's happened here the last right. couple of weeks. So besides the earthworks for the Hoogles and the Berms earlier this spring, the last few weeks have been the parking lot, the boneyard, and a new terrace, a new location for the pooper in the shower.
Right. We had a functioning excavator for a while, but we didn't have a dump truck.
Uh-huh.
And so it's like, okay, well, what are some projects at base camp? Because the excavator was at base camp. So what are some projects at base camp using the excavator that doesn't require a dump truck? And so we built a terrace for the pooper and the shower shack to move to. And we built something terrace-like that's for the boneyard.
Right.
And so that we'll be able to clear a lot of stuff out of the parking lot before the workshop starts.
Yeah, because we're going to need a lot of parking.
And I built submarine access road, and that's going to be the road where we're going to bring the dirt in and the soil in to build hugelkultur beds for our primary market garden space, which will, start off being food for all the people living here and may eventually grow into being, a place of a market garden kind of space.
Right, and that's something people just assume that we're a farm and our end goal is to produce food for sale. And I think, what I've tried to explain to many, many people is you like the idea of the fiefdoms. And if someone wants to take on a market garden, run with it, go with it. But your primary goal is this is Wheaton Laboratories. There's projects you want to see done, different things you want to see proved, different experiments you want to see happening. And a big part of that is bringing the people in to help make all that happen. And then along the way, people can have their little fiefdoms. They can have their market garden, or they could breed livestock guardian dogs, or they could create art and sell it, or they could, do a variety of different things that could be their little side business while they're here.
Which reminds me that apparently Mark Shepard's place, the only way that you can live there is that you have to pay rent to be there and you have to have a business.
Hmm.
And, and if you don't have a business and you don't have the ability to pay rent, don't even talk to him.
Yeah.
And I just read his document about that recently and I was like, wow, that is good. I really need to read his book because, Adrian's still wanting me to do a podcast with him. And I kind of feel like I got to read his book first and then do the podcast.
Yeah.
Are you looking at the book? It's right there.
I know.
There it is. Right there. Read that. Read it.
That's it.
So, and I kind of feel like that's really cool and everything. And I do want to end up doing that. I want people to do the thing that, like what Joel Salatin refers to as fiefdoms, where they're all overlaid.
Yeah.
And I want to get to that.
But,
right now, I don't think anybody here have like a business idea like that?
Not so much yet. I know we've had some people that wanted to make money peeling logs for some Deep Roots people and helping build wolfadis for some Deep Roots people. And some of that's kind of on hold right now.
Okay.
But there's some, that's not really a fiefdom. That's just more, there's an opportunity to, do some side labor.
Okay. All right. So I got a note on here about how I've been putting in a lot of time learning how to make Amazon work. And it's like, because out on Amazon, I've got the Wood Burning Stoves 2.0 4-DVD set, and I've got the playing cards. And it's like the sales of both of them are just, lame. And I just thought all I got to do is get on Amazon and then does great. And it's like, no. You have to spend hundreds of hours learning how to do stuff on Amazon. Because it's like if people go searching for a thing, they won't find it on Amazon unless you do it just the right way.
Well, it's beyond SEO. It's more of a social media thing where you have to watch the reviews,
mitigate the reviews. You have to do all this kind of stuff to promote and get it to come up in people's threads and searches. And it's really a combo of social media and SEO and marketing savvy. It's a whole different animal, just from what I've gleaned from listening to you learn it. So it's very different.
Right. It's a lot of work. And it's just, and I don't know, maybe other people pick it up way easier. I don't want to learn it. I kind of feel like if the existing, because part of the reason why we do the Kickstarters is that we come up with this product, and now we can go and infect permaculture brains
right.
through retail channels.
Yeah.
Because we've already given it away for free. And you know, we've also tied into some of the SEO stuff. And so we've infected brains that way. But it's like, through these retail channels, it's like there are ways to infect brains, but then you take all the money and you just put all the money into like advertising it.
Yeah.
And so it's like, on the other hand, there's plenty of opportunity to spend $5,000 on advertising, which will sell $500 worth of product. And it's like, okay, we can't really do that.
Well, and the craziness too is with playing cards in particular is it's really hard to compete dollar for dollar. Unless you are selling, you know, six figures in quantities, you know, not just six figures in numbers, but six figures in quantities, then the printing costs become to where the price of the deck is affordable. But this is, it's still a niche thing, and the printing costs are really high per deck because of the quantities you're working in. So and the Kickstarter launched it, and it was awesome to have such great enthusiastic support, and there's still a lot of support, and people love the cards because they are fantastic way. Have we said in a podcast before there's a university professor using them to teach permaculture to her students? She uses that image projector,
the opaque projector,
and puts the cards underneath it and talks about permaculture that way. So they're a really awesome educational tool, but it's just not, you know, it's not our parents' retail market anymore. It's so different with the technology, and when it's a niche thing, we just can't get the printing costs that low. So
yeah. And so. But we're doing fine. I mean, now more recently, I've learned some of the things. I've taken, you know, probably I've probably got about 60-70 hours into trying to learn how to do this, and I have not. So the World Domination Gardening DVD and the Hugelkultur Microdoc are now available. They're done. And I haven't put them out to Amazon yet because it's kind of like, what's the point? you send it out to Amazon and it just sits there and collects dust. What is the point of that? You'll sell one a week or something. And it's like, it's not worth the effort. Because the other thing is, you know, of course, Amazon takes a big cut.
Yeah.
And then, you got to ship it there. And then there was the cost of getting them printed and shipped to here. And it's like...
And Amazon charges rent on things that sit in their warehouse.
Yeah.
A lot of people really are enjoying the streaming or the downloads. And I know you just worked something out with Scubly for some of that.
Scubly's been great. I've been doing a lot more with Scubly. And the developer at Scubly, I've been talking to him, exchanging emails with him like five times a week. And there's new features coming on Scubly. It'll be even cooler.
Yeah.
But I've now got a link to, and I'm running banners right now for Stephen Harris's stuff. And so then I get a big kickback on that when people buy that off of Scubly. And so,
and I just like to add, you know, where a lot of this is sounding complicated and things like that, but, it can be super, super simple to support the people you really enjoy by, if you shop on Amazon, go through, an Amazon link through Permies. And usually at the bottom of the page, like it says books recommended, you know, and if you just bookmark one of the books and then buy through that link, the empire gets a kickback. And if you, you were talking too about somebody sent out an email to some of his peoples and he made a couple thousand in Scubly.
That's
affiliate
right.
income.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I just think some of this stuff can be remarkably simple and easy. And we're talking about residual income. And so you can piggyback on other people's stuff to make your residual income. It'd be awesome.
So one guy put together one email and sent it out on one email list, and he made like $2,000. And it's like, I mean, I'm sure all of us are on email lists here and there.
Right.
And
yeah.
And it's like, wow, that was cool. And that was with the Wood Burning Stoves 2.0 4 DVD set.
Nice.
So, but the main reason I'm bringing this up is that a lot of the information that I got that was very helpful came from people. So I made a thread out of the Tinkering Forum asking for help and understanding how to use Amazon. And so then a lot of people posted information there that was helpful. There's a lot of people posting information that seemed to be like, oh, you know what you should do is you should like tell people to buy your stuff. and it's kind of like, okay, we're trying to talk about how to get Amazon to work good for us. But there was a lot of people trying to be helpful, but it's like they don't know anything about how to get Amazon to work. And it's like there's all these things probably the most popular thing to do is that people who come up with an ebook on Kindle, they'll give it away for 48 hours and then stop. And then apparently what that does is that a lot of people will come out to get the free download, and then it suddenly stops and goes to whatever the price is, but it's still got all this traffic coming to it.
Yeah.
And whereas if they just started off listing it at like, I don't know, $1.99 or something, then they might get 12 people buying it. But then if they give it away for free for 48 hours, they might get 20,000 people that'll download it for free. And then they suddenly switch it to $1.99. They might get 20,000 more people to buy it at $1.99.
And that also gets the reviews going and all of that social media stuff going so that it gets things on people's radars in multifaceted ways. But yeah, it's a different kind of selling space.
Yeah, it is. I've learned way too much. I never wanted to know anything about how to sell stuff on Amazon, and I wish I didn't. But, you know, when you're to the point like, we got to feed everybody here, then it's like, okay, what are we going to do here? What are we going to do today?
And when you were talking about the thread in the Tinkering with the Site forum, it reminds me of my favorite catchphrase lately is instead of, you know, is there an app for that? Do you have an app for that? There's a thread for that.
Oh, right. We already talked about that in a thread. Go look at the thread.
There's a thread for that.
All right. We now are managing 300 acres.
Right.
So we had a bad day, and we kind of put a shout out on the Daily-ish email. Does anybody out there want to buy 100 acres right next to the 200 acres of the lab? And Armin and Lori did exactly that. And so now we've got 300 acres. There's another 238 acres that's still up there for sale. It's technically three parcels of land. And our real estate guy on our end suggested that maybe three different permies would want to get together and each throw in a chunk. And then at closing, it would be divided between the three different permies. We had two different people that were kind of talking about it for a while. But we never got real traction on it. But if three different people wanted to do it, we could put in an offer and see.
Yeah.
But it would be about $100,000 a chunk.
And again, it's timberland that has been, you know, harvested a few times. But it's still very heavily wooded in a lot of areas, heavily wooded for Montana, and no utilities.
Oh yeah, no utilities.
It's
jungle. Just because the soil is incredibly deep.
Yeah.
And that's why the laboratory is so awesome.
Yeah, which is unusual for a lot of areas of Montana. But I was excited. I wanted to go back. We were showing somebody the land, and there was this draw that was full of thimbleberries, and I wanted to go back there this summer, and I think I may have missed the thimbleberries.
So if you're interested, send an email to Jocelyn or I, and we'll try and see if we can connect you with sales real estate people or something like that. But that would be awesome to have that be owned by Permi folk. And currently, I'm managing this stuff for Armin and Lori, you know, we're trying to do deep roots there and stuff like that. And we, over the Dailyish email, we sent out a notice about that a while back, and we've got one family that's going to be doing deep roots out there. And that's the other thing too, is Armin and Lori's is far more kid friendly. So, all right. Oh, the rolling shelves in the shop, which, by the way, is still an awesome idea, but some of the wheels broke off.
Yeah, and sometimes you call it the auditorium, sometimes you call it the shop. Usually you call it the auditorium, and Tim calls it the shop.
Yeah. Tim kind of wants it to be, you know, all shop all the time. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the rolling shelves thing is really turning out to be great. And so we just got their 4 feet by 8 feet by 12 feet tall. And there are three enormous shelves, wheels on the bottom, and we can face them to the wall, and then you don't have shelves. Or we just normally, day to day, leave them all facing out, and so that we can get to all the stuff on the shelves. But when we have a workshop or something, then we can face them to the walls, or even better, we can divide the whole auditorium into two chunks. But we had some wheels break off, and on review, it seems that people used wood screws to attach these wheels, these super industrial strength wheels, to the bottoms, and the wood was a little bit punky. So we replaced the wood with much better wood, and we bolted the wheels on. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a lot stronger now. So we've got the rolling shelves are back in action, and I like the idea that we're going to do more of those. hot water from compost. We had some fails on that. I don't know if we mentioned it in a podcast, but we had... the original pile was put together, and we used PEX, and we think PEX was insulated because you would get scalding hot water for about 20 seconds, and then it would be freezing water. So we swapped it out. We have a coil of about 50 feet of copper pipe and 100 feet of half-inch poly pipe, and you're able to go in there and take a shower as long as you want, and it stays hot. So... we had some wonkiness with some of the shower valves, and that's been corrected. But I think the pile is fading. But we're about to move the showers and the pooper, and we'll make a whole new pile sometime in the next couple weeks.
And similar to doing both function and aesthetic upgrades to the pooper, we've also been doing upgrades to the shower. I know Jason replaced the hinges, and there's a bunch of other things we're trying to do. And... you know, we've been so limited on storage. A couple of shower stalls have been storage stalls instead of shower stalls. So hopefully as we add more storage, we can
clear
those
that around,
out too.
Right.
Yeah.
So we've got a network of trails, and I think we have 6 tent pads now.
Did they build 6?
Yeah, there's 5 that are normal-sized tent pads. And there's one that's a freaky jumbo tent pad for my 8-man tent.
Nice.
And the tent pads have sand in them from the parking lot. And I think each of the tent pads is getting a name. And I think Carl Crutch is going to be called the kitty litter box. Because it's kind of a wooden box filled with sand to put your tent in.
So there's a lot of alliteration and name creativity going on. But, they've been using timber edges, you know, timber wood poles, you know, to edge it. And our parking lot behind the auditorium is a huge sand pit. We have more sand than we could use in eons, just about.
Although, it's the only spot that's not solid rock.
Right. Everything else is rocks, but that's all sand. We actually want to make a nice little badminton volleyball court out there because we have a net and we have the stuff for that. And people were really excited to set that up, but we've just been so busy with other things. We haven't set that up yet.
So we've been doing movie nights on Wednesday nights. And we had a lot of movie nights were Dick Prenicke movies. Mm-hmm. And now we have, because of that, we've got phrases like, you could just Prenicke that.
And Dick Prenicke is the guy from the Alone in the Wilderness DVDs from Alaska. And, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a thread for that.
There's been a lot of music nights, especially since Bella's got here. But there have been other music nights. And a lot of times music at the campfires. And so they would do campfires down at the sand pit for a while. And now we've got the Rumford thing up here. Mm-hmm. And then it seems somebody was asking if we play poker every night. I think it's more like once or twice a month.
Yeah, it hasn't been that frequent. Though a lot of the gappers and other people here, they've been doing other games at night. And there's one of them, I don't even know what it is. And then they were playing Settlers of Catan just the other night. And so I think there's spontaneous movies and games. Oh, and just last night, they were doing a movie night here in the garage. I think they were watching Firefly, though.
Yeah.
Showing.
They're probably going to steal my speakers again.
Yeah, yeah.
My speakers are awesome.
I
got the speakers just to be used for in the auditorium with that kind of, with the projector in the auditorium and all that stuff. And they are amazingly good for that. I'm so glad I put the time in to research these speakers because I kind of feel like for the first time in my life I've bought something as an adult. You know, I feel like it's an adult thing you can buy. So often it's like I buy it because it's for my own personal computer. It's always been the crappiest speakers, just something that'll just barely work. And now it's actually nice. It's like, wow, the sound quality in these speakers is good. I'll just plug them into my computer when we're not having to do an auditorium thing. So that's
awesome.
That's been fantastic. We harvested 2 gallons of honey from the beehive in the bee hut.
Yeah.
We have one hive. And the bee hut, of course, I think we've talked about it in a previous podcast. It's probably one of the coolest things to come out of everything going on here.
Yeah.
And mostly because it's like, I feel like so much of what we're trying to do is to facilitate innovation. Mm-hmm. And so here's a couple. They said, we want to learn about skiddable structures. So they used my design from 10 years ago. Tim helped them, gave them advice mostly. So about 95-96% of the labor that went into the skiddable woodshed was Emily and Tony. Mm-hmm. And then on their own, they made the bee hut. Skiddable bee hut. And Christy came and helped them with wiring it up with an electric fence kind of thing to keep bears out of it. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it's a magnificent bee hut.
Yeah.
And I just kind of feel like that's exactly the kind of thing that I'm hoping that comes out of here, stuff that I don't even know anything about until it's completed, and it's magnificent.
Yeah, and you know, like the table and benches Justin has built, and even the tent pads and the trails, and as they start doing all of this stuff, it's just making things so much nicer here. But Jacob Wissner brought a swarm out, and he's with Sapphire Permaculture Apiary. He has a Facebook page. I don't think he has a website yet.
I think he's listened to all of the podcasts.
Yeah, so he brought that out, and then he came out with his centrifuge and harvested. And he was awesome in how he was just carefully brushing off all the bees off of each frame. And he said, you know, other beekeepers would have been really angry with him for going so slowly. They're just bees. Who cares? But that was just the way he wanted to do it. It was really awesome.
one of the things that we've been struggling with this year is the well. In fact, last year our cistern ran dry a couple of times. We've learned that our well is 300 feet deep and it gets 3 gallons per minute. And we have put enormous gobs of time into trying to understand how the hell does this thing even work? And, you know, we've got the ability to configure it. How do we configure it to work better? Why does it keep emptying out? And so I think we found a couple of leaks in a couple of spots, and we've amended those. And now the cistern is full. So this, just quickly, in a nutshell, it seems like the primary functioning of the well, you've got a pump that's 300 feet down, and you've got a controller that's up here. And what happens is that the pump is activated, and then when it draws power at a certain way, then it just keeps going and going and going until the cistern is full. But if the cistern is not full, and then suddenly the pump's power consumption changes, which would be an indicator that it ran out of water down there. And because the thing is, it's so deep, it has to be a very powerful pump because it's so deep. And so then if it runs out of water 300 feet down, then the controller will sense the different kind of draw of power and then shut the pump off for an hour. And then, of course, there's another pump that pumps to the house and also fills a pressure bladder. You know, a little pressure tank. And that's a different thing. But just getting the water into the cistern, this is what we've figured out, is that you want to set it for about an hour. We tried setting it for shorter times, and we learned that was a terrible idea. Mm. You want, if anything, set it for a longer time. And so basically it needs to restore the water that's around there at a rate of about 3 gallons per minute. And, you know, so after 60 minutes, there might be, you know, more than 100 gallons that it can pump up. And then an hour later, it'll try again. And then it'll pump up, you know, about 100 gallons before it runs out. And then you wait another hour.
We have a lot of people using water here. We're not irrigating, but there have been times, and Tim isn't doing this now, but Tim was getting water for his household and his animals here as well at different times. And especially getting animals for the cows and pigs. And, you know, that ends up being a lot of water, as well as his whole household water. But even with that, we knew, you know, and even with our workshops last fall and things like that, we knew there should be plenty of water in the well, but when the cistern was running dry, we determined it was leaks down the outdoor water hydrants and things like that.
Right. So we're working on getting water up at the laboratory as well. We just got in a well drilling rig, so. We will start getting experience in that soon. This podcast is continued in part 3.